The following is a conversation. It has the features of any conversation, such as imperfectly expressed thoughts, ill-considered opinions, and the notions of several sleep-deprived brains. Try not to get your stethoscope in a twist about it.
I know your face. This is so weird. And I've seen you in the halls before.
Okay,
and I've been like, I know this girl, but I don't remember why.
I feel like
kinesiology major.
I was not, but my sister was. So I think you're getting us confused. We don't look that similar. No? Do you know Amaris? I'm just like exposing my sister on the podcast.
What was your major?
My major was in engineering.
Maybe that's why I know you. I had roommates in engineering. I don't know. This is very
odd. Well, it's
odd.
Lovely to meet you.
Hi, yes.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like I am now becoming that like obscure person that like was roaming the halls of medical school once, but is now just like doing research and like her PhD world, where I'm pretty detached from like all other people. So I'm starting to realize that about myself. Get higher.
I think you should start dressing strangely.
Should I?
Like many other lab people that I've seen. Not strangely, but just like
unique.
Super ultra casual.
Yeah. I do feel like being able to just wear jeans every day is pretty cash. Yeah.
And if you're not wearing ear pods at all times.
Oh no, I have headphones on like at all times. Yeah. It's absurd. I have friends that'll comment and be like, what are you gaming? I was like, I don't know. Like,
do you have the big ones?
Yeah, because I like to remind myself that I am youthful by being on Be Real. So Dave, you weren't once.
And no longer on Facebook though.
I did delete my Facebook app.
We're going to find out how this is a...
I know.
At some point.
Yes, I need to. It's been bugging me. Sorry, but I'll let it go for now.
It's a mystery.
Before we start.
Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Shortcoat Podcast. It's the show that gives you an inside look at medical school from the students drinking from that fire hose. It's a production of the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. I'm Dave Etler. With me today in the SCP studio and on the internet, some students who are already making their mark in medicine. Spin your way to youth and health with her old age rejuvenator centrifuge. It's PA1 Faith Anto.
Bless up. My old age. I'm almost 25.
Centrifuge. You're not old age. It's your people who you're spinning in your centrifuge to rejuvenate them.
Oh, yes. Wisdom.
Remember?
Yes.
Faith, the thing that you invented? Yeah.
Yeah.
Her portable anti-cholera vapor bath will allow you to sit in a cloud of sweat and humidity in the comfort of your home. It's MD PhD student Riley Bienbush.
Wow, that sounds really delightful. It's like a sauna, but worse. Yes.
Protect your fetus from cell phone radiation with his copper-infused fabric dress. It's M3 Happy Kumar.
Hello.
And cure your hiccups with his specially designed straw. It's M2 Jeff Goddard, joining us all the way from South Africa.
Woo!
Hello.
Yeah, these are all actual inventions. You guys didn't make these.
No,
don't sue us, makers of these things. Actually, some of them are dead.
These are actual things, though.
Yeah, all of them are actual dubious
inventions. I would love to just go down the list of like patents in the world. Yeah. I bet there are some absolutely unhinged patents.
Yeah.
From someone just getting crazy with some ideas and saying, what's the worst that can happen? I might as well get the patent.
Yeah.
This is how we advance.
Yeah.
I feel like that'll be like really good for trivia because you figure out someone who made like one invention and you figure out that they also own a patent for some completely unrelated invention in another field. And you'd be like, hey, did you know that the person who made like X also happened to make like, I don't know, a portable toilet or something? And you're like, damn.
This would be a great trivia question. Or like two truths and a lie. Like which of these inventions is
that
not?
That could be a theme of a show sometime. Yeah. That would be fun.
Yeah. Okay.
We could just do it right now.
I don't know if I'm prepared to be that spontaneous.
That's okay.
Faith.
Spontaneity. Isn't spontaneity on like one of those laptop stickers you have? Or
I don't think that's one of them.
No. Well, I don't have my laptop with me.
Anyway, thank you guys for joining me on the show today. We do have a listener question. We haven't gotten a lot of listener questions lately, and I'm so glad that Savannah phoned in with her question to the Shortcoat Podcast hotline, 347-SHORT-CT. You can also email us at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Let's hear Savannah's question.
Hi, this is Savannah. I wanted to say I absolutely love this podcast.
It's given a lot of great insight and sparked a lot of self-reflection as I apply to medical school. I also wanted to ask a question for all of y'all to answer. I've worked as a mental health tech in a youth mental health rehabilitation facility, as well as a nursing assistant in a hospital and a nursing home. In these jobs, I've encountered a lot of lack of advocates for my patients and even some instances of abuse that I had to report from other coworkers. I was wondering if y'all could talk on the podcast a little bit about how, as healthcare professionals in general, and specifically as physicians, y'all work to be patient advocates and to prevent abuse in situations where patients can't advocate for themselves, especially without burning yourselves out and without taking all of the emotional baggage that comes on with working in these positions.
What do you guys learn about patient advocacy?
In terms of just kind of our curriculum here, or in
general? Like, what do you learn? And that, I mean, you're out in the clinics these days.
Yeah.
So you could maybe tell us a little bit about that part of it.
Sure. Yeah. So first off, Savannah, thank you for the question. I think it's a really important question, simply just because, like, we're here to help out our patients, and helping out our patients is to listen to them, advocate for them, figure out what their needs are, and then just ways to help them and their needs. But just kind of, this might be a bit of a long answer, but I have three answers for you, essentially. So the first one is talking about not getting burnt out and taking emotional burdens. And number one for that would essentially just be, like, remember to take care of yourself. Oftentimes, when I find myself kind of lacking empathy and not being able to be at my game 100% whenever I myself am tired, I'm just kind of thinking about, like, if I'm working like an overnight shift, and if it's 2 a.m. and I'm not really running on sleep, and if I haven't eaten anything and I'm just looking forward to getting home, the next time I see a patient coming in, I'm just going to want to get that encounter done and over with. And just kind of like being aware of that, where it's like, oh, hey, like, I myself am hurting, and this might be a good time for me to, like, take a step back a little bit, go out, get a snack to eat, take a power nap, just, like, take care of myself a little bit more, just so I can then be focused and take care of my patients. So that's, like, the first thing that I do in order to avoid burnout a little bit. Simply just because, like, I find that, like, if my needs aren't being met, then I'm not really going to care about anyone else, unfortunately. That's one. Number two is just kind of, and this will help out on the advocacy side, is just to kind of be aware of your own personal biases. Especially in healthcare, you're gonna see patients from all walks of life, from all sorts of backgrounds. The first patient you see, you might be like, oh, this is really serious, I want to help you out and everything. And then it might just be a bread and butter case. But then the next case you see just might be really sad, really terrible. And you might even just walk in and already have preconceived notions about these patients. And just kind of like being aware of, like, you know, just kind of like the mental box that you put them in. And the fact that they're not going to be in that box. And you shouldn't necessarily always treat them as if they're in that box. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah. So we all have biases and everything. And just like being aware of them is the first part of the... It's just the first part.
Because I think I think what you're saying is, even if you are aware that somebody needs help,
right,
and you're coming to it from that perspective,
right,
you've already, but you haven't actually met them or talked to them yet. You've already made some judgment about them that may or may not be warranted, that might color your perception of that encounter.
Right, because no matter what, most of the time before you see a patient, you're either going to be reading in their chart and reading their previous notes and, in a sense, like, getting to know them and seeing these preconceived notions before you even see them, right?
And those notes that you read, as much as you might want them to be or as much as you expect them to be,
right,
they may not tell, they won't tell that person's whole story.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, like an example would be, you read in the notes that this person is frequently coming back to the emergency department. You might go in and be like, oh, well, I'm already have this bias that this person may be here for a reason that they don't need to be. And then you go in and you're not actually going to be able to like listen to that patient and yep. kind of understand and hear what they actually have to say.
Yeah, so
it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. Like
yep.
there could be experiences in which the boy crying wolf is the doctors who have had preconceived notions in the past that you're reading about, or actual true stories about patients. But regardless, it, those are the biases.
Yeah. And then one last thing. This is just simply because like, I'm coming off of my OB rotation, and especially like as a guy being on an OB rotation, there's a lot of like privacy concerns, and just it's easy for me to make a patient uncomfortable. So before like walking into like a patient's room, I'd always just be like, okay, just like be the doctor that you want your that I want my mom to see, right? And it's just kind of just making things a little bit more personal, talking someone through it, listening to them a lot more, and just be the be that patient advocate. I don't know necessarily like if that'll help out, but that's just kind of something that like I told myself. I'm like, hey, like remember, like these are actual people that you're dealing with, and like make sure, like you figure out what they're telling you and why they're telling it to you and how it relates to their health.
Man,
Jeff, what in the didactic curriculum, what have they taught you about patient advocacy so far? You just finished year one.
Yeah, so I was actually thinking of the hidden curriculum that we've gotten a little bit. So we've had some small groups where we will practice with these hypothetical situations of what would you do if a patient is insulting a fellow staff member, or what would you do if a fellow medical student has made some racist comment toward a patient, or an attending has made some, I don't know, inappropriate comment about a patient that you're about to see. And I have a very strong sense of justice. It gets me into trouble a little bit sometimes. I have a hard time, like, you know, waiting for the proper moment. And several times I've been like, well, probably the best thing to do would have been to, like, anonymously report instead of confronting the individual. And I keep thinking, like, no, the patient needs an advocate right now. And so I think that, I mean, obviously there's a balance between trying to do what's best for your career and not like always fighting these battles, but also I'm somewhat concerned that the implicit or sometimes explicit instruction is don't make a fuss, don't make waves, and then if you need to silently anonymously report what happened.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm normally the happy-go-lucky optimistic one, but in this situation I think I'm not as optimistic.
Yeah, I was thinking about ways, you know, one of the things that she mentioned in her question, which kind of derailed me when I was first thinking about this, was the thing that she said was about abuse of patients by coworkers. And that's tragic.
I kind of I worked in a nursing home too, like Savannah did. And it does happen. And I worked in one that was for more affluent people. And the fact of the matter is that in our country, like, I mean, okay, tangent, but the book Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, I think is how I say his name, or how we say
did it.
Recommend that to anyone here, anyone listening. Excellent author. But we have, like, in America and probably around the world, like, a really awful problem with how we treat our wiser population when our bodies begin to fail, you know? And America is all about independence and we're go-getters and we're taking care of ourselves. And then, you know,
people
get left behind.
People who need us get left behind.
And I'm so not saying that is right, but I'm just saying that it's a reality of medicine and healthcare workers, and it really stinks. So the fact that Savannah, that you actually were able to report those things that you observed, that is incredibly brave and honestly not something that a lot of people do, I don't think, because of, you know, just like about everything in life, medicine is about power, hierarchy, and we're afraid of repercussions that might fall on us if we decide to go against that. So.
And it requires that you, like, every place puts systems, I think probably a lot of places put systems in place that you're supposed to use in order to report such things, right? But doing so requires that you trust the system. And that's a big ask. I want to acknowledge that, you know, that's a really big ask.
Because it's easy for us to sit here on our righteous seats and be like, oh yeah, if I saw this happening to a patient, no doubt in my mind would I go to the higher ups and report it. But the fact of the matter is, it's hard. It's a hard thing to do, but we do it because it's right.
I think there can be a way to do it. And Jeff sort of touched on this when he sort of was talking about himself as a crusader a little bit. I can't remember the exact word you used.
A bulldog, maybe.
Yeah, but I think the thing to do is, especially if you're not in a position of power, like as a medical student, mm-hmm. I think the thing probably to consider is talk about the facts that you see in front of you. Mm-hmm. So if you're a medical, for instance, if you're a medical student, you go into a patient's room and you see a new bruise. The thing to do is to talk about that bruise and to go to your resident or your attending or whatever and say, hey, I noticed this. Just want to let you know. Because number one, it could be clinically significant in some other way, right? But it's also sort of an indication that something isn't right here. Now, I'm sort of approaching this as if, you know, you're first on the scene to notice this, but you may not be the first on the scene to notice it. This may be something that's sort of piling up, you know, something that's sort of piling up among the reports that your residents or your attendings are getting and maybe starting to make them suspicious.
And I think one of the key things too is, as a medical student or any trainee in the medical establishment, you're more likely to spend more time with that patient
yes.
than like anyone else that's coming through the rooms, aside for maybe some of the like other care providers. But especially compared to like your residents and your doctors, you are likely to be the one that's going to like have a conversation with them, ask them about their grandkids, ask them about what they do for work, like et cetera, et cetera. So you're going to have more time with them and you are going to be able, like you might think, well, maybe they all saw it.
Yeah.
Odds are they probably didn't.
Maybe they
didn't.
Because
you're really the one that has spent the most time, likely.
Odd that you should bring that up. I posed this question to a couple of faculty members. The first is Dave Asprey. He's one of the deans, the student affairs and curriculum deans. And he's also the head of the PA program. And he's in charge of the preclinical phase of our curriculum. And I asked him, you know, his thoughts about your question, Savannah. So let's hear from Dean Asprey.
So yeah, during the didactic phase, we certainly help our students recognize that as a critical member of the healthcare team, they are going to have those situations where they're interacting with patients and may have information from the patient that other members of the healthcare team who maybe have had less opportunity to interact with the patient or maybe just have not had that same information shared with them might have a very differing perspective on what a desired treatment might be. Lab tests, procedures that might otherwise be ordered. And so certainly our students can bring those issues to the attention of either the residents or the attending physicians that they're working with. Oftentimes patients might be a little more willing to share information with a medical student or a PA student simply because they maybe feel like they're not quite as powerful or as busy on the team. And so rather than taking some of that information to an attending, I think a lot of times they're willing to share that with a student who then in turn can be their advocate.
I had an experience.
Oh, did you?
Like in this realm, and I'll try to like make sure it is well kind of under the veil of anonymity.
De-identified.
Yeah. So I had gone in and seen a patient and they had expressed to me that they had previous experiences with eating disorder, disordered eating. And it was going to be a topic of conversation at that experience with the doctor. It was in an area of medicine in which talking about diet and weight was likely going to come up. And so this person really expressed to me that they've really worked through this a lot. It was going to be really difficult to work through that. They were well aware that it was going to be a topic of conversation. And if it didn't need to be, then it would be really appreciated by the patient. And ultimately, like from my perspective as a medical student, I could see that this person really understood. And I wanted to make sure that the doctor knew that and knew to like tread lightly into that conversation and to come at it from a very empathetic perspective. And I talked to this patient and I said, well, likely it's going to come up. What do you need to make sure that it is like an open and honest conversation if it has to come up? And we had a really good conversation. And ultimately, when the doctor came in and I was in the room as well, this patient ended up starting to cry and I was like, a little worried. I was like, oh no, like we messed it up. Like I told the doctor to do the wrong thing. But she looked at us and she was like, I've never felt so heard by a medical provider ever. Mm. And it was all because that provider had the information from the measly little medical student who got to go in and spend 20 minutes and just talk with this person. And so the doctor knew, tread lightly. And amazing. It was awesome. And like, it really did work. And it, I so easily could have gone to that doctor and been like, eh, I don't really want to like add more to this person's plate. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, whatever, this person, get over it. But it was so important and you could tell so much that it was. So it's not even just like patients that are like those kind of big things where it's like, oh, you know, when it's happening, that someone got hit or some abuse is happening. But really, it's just like listening to them and make like taking that little extra effort to make sure that they are heard, seen, and treated.
Fairly. And this is how it's supposed to work, right? I mean, yeah. You're supposed to be as the, you know, you're on a team of people who are providing for patients, right? You should be sharing the information that you have so that everybody knows what's going on, has all the information, and can do the best they can for the patient. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
What a great sort of formative experience for you.
It was so formative. And I think the other thing that's been so formative that we learned during our didactics is just always ask the patient what they're thinking. Like, what do you think it is? What are you thinking? Like, patient advocacy can range. It's anything from, you know, reporting when something wrong is happening, but it's also really important to just hear them when they say, I think my appendix is bursting. Maybe you should check on the appendix. Or maybe they say, well, I really think I have cancer. And in the back of your brain, you're probably like, well, no. But remember, they're telling you that because they're anxious. They're worried about something really tragic happening in their life. Don't just be like, nah, you don't have cancer. You have to like walk them through that. Make them feel heard, seen, acknowledged. Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah. Shortcoats, we love to hear from you, no matter what it's about. So call us at 347-SHORT-CT with questions, shower thoughts, complaints about your situation, whatever you like. We'll talk about it on the show. Specifically thinking about Savannah's question, what do they tell you about mandatory reporting as medical students? When I looked at what mandatory reporters were in Iowa, and I assume it's going to vary from state to state, it wasn't clear to me that medical students were included in that.
I think in a way we are.
I mean, like, you have to be, right?
No, we definitely are. At least like in terms of children, pediatrics, and dependent older adults. Mm-hmm. Like, we signed up for this profession and we have a duty to our profession and like primarily our patients to look out in their best interests.
Yeah. If we're in a situation where we might have to like report like suspected abuse with a patient, then typically
we will be with someone else. We're like, being supervised as students.
Yeah. I will. Yeah. Yeah. So I may go in there alone on my own, but the resident will definitely
follow up.
And the attending will also definitely follow up. So like, it might not be us specifically who are the mandated reporters, but like, someone who is a mandated reporter will be in that chain of command and they will like lay eyes and talk to the patient.
Yeah.
I want to hear from Katie Harris. She's our McCowan Learning Community faculty director, one of the two. And I sent her the question so that she could weigh in. Let's hear from her.
Hi, this is Dr. Katie Harris, and I am an internal medicine physician, and I work primarily in the hospital, but also do some outpatient work. And I think that this is a really great question about how to care for patients who have suffered abuse. You know, in my work as primarily an inpatient internal medicine physician, I have seen patients who have been abused, usually patients with intellectual disabilities or dementia, and or are suffering from elder abuse. I think that for me, the best way to help these patients is to involve others. So having our multidisciplinary team, including the nurses, nursing assistants, and social workers are really the key to helping these patients move forward and to prevent abuse from happening in the future. I know that she mentioned in the question, how do we prevent abuse from occurring? And for me, unfortunately, when I'm seeing the patients, it's usually after the abuse has occurred, and we're more looking toward preventing abuse in the future. To be honest with you, medical school doesn't train me to know all of the resources within the community and also all of the legal aspects that come into play. And that is where the social workers are really invaluable to me. So having that multidisciplinary team and support is what's most important. Secondly, I think the question asked about how to not let this lead to burnout. And for me, I think, you know, I feel very empowered to be the patient advocate. So that's my time to speak up on their behalf, to get the right people involved. And honestly, that makes me feel as though, you know, I'm really helping them and helping them to stay safe in the future. So I guess that aspect of it has not burned me out in the past, because I focus on the advocacy work that I'm doing on each patient's behalf.
Awesome response, and gets to exactly what you were saying, Riley, about your success in that particular example that you gave. You did something good that day. Ain't nothing, ain't no reason to burn out over that. And, you know, you go back and listen to a recent episode that we did with Wendy Dean, where she talked about burnout being more a moral injury. And I think the point, the salient point there is that, you know, yes, you're going to work real hard. Yes, you're going to work long hours. Yes, it's going to be a demanding profession. But really, when people burn out, it may be more about not being able to do the right thing for your patient because the system won't let you. And in this case, and in the situation that Katie is talking about, in the case that you brought up, that's not what's happening. You're able to make a profound difference in somebody's life because you noticed and you acted upon the information that you had. Hard to get burnt out over that sort of thing. Now, I would love to know more about Savannah's experience reporting abuse, because it may not have worked out the same way in her situation at a mental health facility. I don't know. But I think at a teaching hospital, especially, you're going to find a very different dynamic. Mm. It's unfortunate that, you know, people who are so dependent on caregivers may not be able to trust them. That's horrible.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, I think, Happy, you said earlier that you're an optimist, or no, that was Jeff that said that chooses to view the world like in a positive light, right? And I don't know, like, I don't want to be cynical when I say this, but I think that humans, whether they're in the medical profession and, like, you know, we're going to do good work, but at the same time, like, we're still human and we have the propensity to be bad, you know, like, no matter how we try, but we can also try to be good despite, like, being tired. And I think it's important to, like, realize that, because, like, in my personal life, if I'm tired, if I'm fed up with stuff, like Happy alluded to, when he needs a snack, like, we snap at people. We don't behave in a way that we'd be proud.
Not me. I'm pleasant at all times.
Oh, I can totally see that. Just like sunshine, rainbows all the time.
Absolutely.
So, and again, like, you talked about biases, right? Someone did. But, like, just being aware of that and being aware that other people also suffer in the same way. And maybe some people want to be mean, in which case they need help, in my opinion. We all need help, but, like, just be aware that does happen, and then be willing to have conversations with your coworkers or anyone that is struggling with that.
Yeah, brief story time. So I was on a rotation where we had a patient come in with a very horrific injury, and the prognosis, like, was not good. And just kind of the circumstances for the injury were also, like, really sad. One of my friends was there whenever this patient came to their department first. And then they had to take they were told to take time off and talk with their team a little bit. And then they just cried for 30 minutes. And when they came up to my team, I just kind of remember seeing this patient for the first day. But, like, a couple of the residents, like, sat me down. They're like, yeah, what you saw was horrific. And just remember to, like, take time for yourself and talk about this with yourself, other people, your therapist, and everything. Because you're still going to be seeing stuff like this in the future, but like, don't be ashamed to like reach out and get help and talk about this and go through your emotions and don't just keep it all in. And then later on, I talked to my attending about it. And it's something that they said that stuck out to me was, behind every great surgeon is a graveyard of sorrows and regrets. And to me, that just kind of hammered in the point that, like, yeah, you're going to be seeing stuff that isn't great, and it's going to have an impact on you. And that might, you know, stay in your mind for years and decades on end, but you should still learn how to take care of yourself and learn how to, like, just figure out these coping strategies, which, I mean, we're still kind of in like our training phase, so we're still figuring all that out.
And yeah, you're going to be figuring this out for years to come.
Yeah.
You're, just when you think you figured it out, boom. Yeah.
And so, like, it's like, this is like a really hard concept for, and like, people have their own ways of just kind of like dealing with all this stuff. But like, again, like, that might change for years. I remember, like, I was upset at one point, since just kind of like any patient who's like older and who's an immigrant, since I see my parents in them, that like gets me upset. And like, there have been attendings who like have gotten upset whenever like something happens to a patient, and that patient is like the same age as their kid.
Yeah.
You know,
there are still patients like 2 years removed from clinicals where I'm like, in my brain, I'm like, I wonder where they are.
Yeah.
Because they just stick with you.
Stories stick.
Yeah.
I'm trying, sitting over here thinking about why these things happened. Like a lot of pre-med students, I worked as a CNA for a while. Specifically, I worked in memory care overnight while I was doing a full course load during the day. I was not my best on those shifts. A lot of my coworkers were also not their best. And we probably didn't treat the patients as well as they deserved. Like, I wasn't, you know, running around pushing them downstairs or anything, but they deserve a lot more than what we're able to give them a lot of the times as caregivers. And the difference in like an academic institution like the University of Iowa is there's a larger team. The problem, I think, that I've noticed is when something is a for-profit venture, not to get on my anti-capitalism rant, which I'm certainly not. I'm all for capitalism. But when healthcare becomes for-profit and profit is the most important part of the endeavor for the owners, we start working on the margins, and all of a sudden, six people are taking care of 30 people, six people are taking care of 40 people. And it goes back to this idea that, like, I like what Faith said, like, if somebody's hurting somebody else, it's probably because they need help. One would hope that person would rise above it and do the noble thing, and it's a beautiful thing when somebody does. But at the same time, like, maybe stop setting up a system where you either have to be essentially a paragon of virtue or fail and cause harm. Like, maybe just make a system where it's easier to do good and harder to do harm by hiring more people, you know?
Yeah.
If you want to fight burnout, if you want to give people more autonomy, if you want to prevent these types of callous acts against more especially our elderly population, but we need more caregivers, and we need hours that are more conducive to them being humane. That's it.
And I think that's a fair point too, which is that like idea of the paragon of virtue. And say you're a medical student leaving for the day after 12 hours.
What does paragon mean?
I think it's just like you are an exemplar. You are like the vision of virtue. You are
the ideal.
The ideal.
Wow. Love this. Okay. Sorry. Carry on.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I was just thinking, because I think you could very much, if you're anything like me and you have even a dabble of anxiety, where you would leave the day and you would think to yourself, geez, I really should have advocated for this patient, or I really should have done this. And like, you could leave your day just wallowing in the, I should have helped more than I did. And I think like Jeff brings up a great point, which is, there is a lot we can do as patient advocates. I think it's really important that we do. There is also some times where we will miss.
Yeah.
And be compassionate with yourself and to recognize you might have missed it because you've worked 3 24-hour shifts this week, or you were on your 27th hour of call and you just got another patient right before the day team was coming in and you're trying to scramble. Like, you're gonna miss some. The goal is not to get every single thing right. It is not kind of like a points game. You lose out on an opportunity to help and be an advocate. You are not immediately back to zero. Like, it is just incremental changes over time, and recognizing that, like, little tweaks and putting yourself outside the box and saying to a doctor, hey, I think this patient doesn't want to talk about this, or saying to your team, hey, I think this patient is being abused. Like, those little things are going to make a massive difference. But if you miss them, it'll be okay. It's also not okay, but like, I'm just trying to, like, I guess,
also
recognize that we are also human.
Yeah, we'll, I think, which, but I also want to point out that, you know, I don't want to take your example of, like, going home and saying I f***ed up. That damage is done, and I'm a terrible person.
You do realize your audience is right. We are type A. Everything must be perfect all the time.
I don't want
to
take,
like, it does not have to be. You do not have to be perfect. Okay, anyone?
I don't want to take that super literally, but I do want to point out that it's rarely the case. So that's all or nothing thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's rarely the case that you can't go back and fix it.
True. Mm-hmm. True.
You know, you could go the next day and say to your team members, I couldn't let go of this situation that happened yesterday. Can we talk about it? And you should do that. Yeah, absolutely.
And even if you don't do that, like, if there's one patient that you can't help, then at least you will have in your mind, I miss this. That is really upsetting. That is really bad. And I am not ever going to do that again.
You try very hard.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's the suffering of what? Oh, Calgen. What is the suffering of few for the many? What is that? Is it
the justice?
Utilitarianism.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes.
Tip of my tongue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeff, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that, so I have a lot of friends that get on to me because I'm a bit of a perfectionist, but I am the most type B personality ever. Like, it's a false dichotomy anyway, but, like, I'm big chillin'. Like, my whole life is big chillin'. And it's because of that idea that Riley brought up, this self-compassion, this idea mm-hmm. that, like, I want to be perfect. Like, I literally want to be perfect. But also, at the end of the day, I can say, I could have done better today. I can forgive myself and I'll do better tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's especially with something like medicine, where you'll spend an entire lifetime trying to improve so that you can better help people. I think that's, like, probably one of the most important lessons that you can learn, that you have to be able to forgive yourself and move on. And Riley opened that with, like, maybe you're a little bit like me. I think, you know what, Riley, if we were all a little bit more like you, we'd probably be a lot better off. So,
yeah, I mean, you might just, like, be in your head a little bit more. But yes, I do like to believe that the worry that people have is only driving them to be better. Do I think that you should go outwardly worry about everything? No, that's wrong. But just,
it's a little hard to
realize. Yeah, therapy.
10% better therapy. The next day, or whatever, like, the, like, buzzwords that we've got.
Yeah. Shout out therapy.
Shout out therapy.
Throw it out there.
Nope. BetterHelp, can we get them as a sponsor? They're on every other podcast. Yeah.
A friend of mine told me, like, just go to therapy. It's like a nice mental oil change, and that's kind of how I like to describe it.
I love that.
But medicine's kind of a weird field in the sense that, like, whenever you're applying to it, you have to, like, be a perfectionist. You have to take all these standardized tests. You have to have, like, the perfect application, write the perfect essays and everything. And then whenever you're a doctor, all that kind of just, like, goes out
the window. Or even when you're a student.
Yeah. Like, how do you assign point values to, like, talking to a patient? Like, you can't, you know? And medicine's, like, one of the fields where even if you do everything 100% right, things can still go wrong. And it's not on you if that happens. So, like, I'm definitely all for, like, be easier on yourself and on the compassion train too.
It's very trite. All you can do is your best and keep doing that.
Yeah. Hot tip. If anyone wants to, like, get rid of their academic validation, do a PhD. You'll get no feedback.
No, thank you.
You'll get no feedback.
But love that.
You'll
for
write
you.
A paper once a year. Then you'll get copious amounts of feedback that you don't want but are useful. It'll just vanish. It would recommend.
Okay.
10 out of 10 Rileys would recommend.
Okay.
Shortcoats, if you're enjoying our conversation today, I'd be grateful if you'd let people know by posting a story on Instagram or Facebook or tweeting about us. And don't forget to tag us in your post.
Thank you.
Jeff had alluded to, like, policy and politics being the overarching influence on how we are able to deliver care, money being at the root of all evil. So I just, this is my soapbox. This is what I'm passionate about. So like, we have immense power as individuals if we go on our own as a group to our legislators, if we go to in Iowa, if we go to Des Moines, if we go to see the people that are actually stakeholders in policy. I mean, hell, if you even go to Washington, D.C., I don't know, write letters, do what you can, because like I have become really involved with that this year. And in that, I think I have found immense purpose. So, and previously in my life, I was interested. I didn't really believe that I could have an impact, but I think that if it's something that's truly important to you and at the, like the foundation of it is that our patients, we want better healthcare for them. And if we want that, then we need to initiate change in policy that enables us to deliver that care. So that's kind of my message, is that like, yes, you are one person. Yes, you may be, I don't know how old with however much experience in politics, but like, that doesn't really matter. Like, I would like to believe that politicians haven't, they would give an ear to anyone. Chuck Grassley even wrote me back when I emailed him about some issue. Their secretary really will write you back.
You can get a response.
Yeah. Like, it's, do it. And it's fun just to be like, new experience. It's scary, but like, goddamn, grow up, be involved in our country. I don't know.
Brief plug to the HDSMP, Healthcare Delivery Systems Management and Policy Distinction Track at the University of Iowa.
How in the hell did that come out of your mouth?
Harvard College of Medicine.
We need rebranding.
Acronyms. Speaking acronyms, man. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. If anyone's interested in that, there's a management track over here where our distinction track where you can actually, like, you know, meet up with legislators and everything, mm-hmm. actually go on like a policy elective. Yeah. We had like someone come speak like a couple months ago. It was one of the local senators. I forgot his name. It's a really bad look for me. But he like mentioned that like a lot of people who are like making like the state legislature laws actually mm-hmm. like have never been to college, which talking with us,
they're business, like I've met them in February. They own businesses. They don't. Or they're farmers. They just do politics as a side job because they feel a duty to serve.
Right. Like, and and props for them. Right. And like they have their area of expertise, but we have our area of expertise and that doesn't overlap with their area of expertise. So that's why we need to go and talk to them and show them our perspective and everything, right? Because if we're physicians,
As a student who has gone to Des Moines and to Washington, D.C. to meet with legislators, they are very receptive, especially if somebody is in a field of interest like medicine, where it's like, you're the ones that see the patients. You're the ones that know what these policies are actually going to do. Talk to us. And they are very receptive, either through letters or through advocacy groups, or go on your own, I guess. But certainly one of the nice things about medicine is there are always going to be groups that you can join. So I'm personally, this may or may not help my case, but I'm a member of the American Medical Association, the Iowa Medical Society, the Iowa Public Health Association, and a couple of other advocacy groups that spend their time trying to get legislators to do things. And I've seen legislators change their minds on several issues. They voted mm-hmm. differently because of meetings that they've had with either me or somebody that's just like me, another medical student who is trying to help them make better decisions. So yeah, you can, if you want to be a good advocate for your patients, there are not really a lot of places where you can have more of an impact than with the legislators.
I am very inspired now by all three of you. I will give my own personal biases in that I see politics and I think to myself, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I feel like nothing's going to change. And if it's going to change, it's not going to change for the better. Like, so I do think you guys have all encouraged me to like get a little more involved. What? Not that this was about me, but I just want to let you know for all those people out there that are like, ew, politics. This is important.
It's ew, politics, because we've spent how long of society thinking ew, politics, when really we're blessed to have a democracy. We can like speak to the people that make the decisions that affect everyone. Jeff, so yeah.
Jeff, do you know the U.S. House member?
Congressman Johnson?
Is he the guy who does the really great TikToks?
The one in North Carolina who's on the U.S. Armed Services Committee?
I think that's him, yeah.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite humans.
His message is that politicians are actually kind of reasonable people. Where they appear to be unreasonable, they're trying to get the attention of the media by being sort of outlandish. This is, you know, this is how they get attention, how they keep their jobs. Is that cool? No.
Can you imagine if doctors did that?
Right?
Maybe it is the
maybe that's what we gotta do.
Maybe it is the equivalent of driving into Chicago and you just see like personal injury lawyers and doctors having billboards left and right, but like this is on a new scale.
Yeah. I don't know. And I'm sure there are individual legislators that we could think of that probably are not normal and reasonable people when the cameras are off, but you know, it's part of this game that they play, especially on the national level.
I mean,
that I think makes us go ill politics.
And I'm sorry, his name is actually Jeff Jackson.
That's what it is. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Go follow him on this. Go follow him on the socials.
Oh, I love a Hank Green reference. Go
yes.
Ahead. Oh boy, howdy do I love that man. And he made a comment about media in general that I thought was very apt. This idea that the problem with all media is that bombastic comments, divisive language gets likes. It draws you in, right? And that's true if you're writing in the newspaper. That's true if you're on CNN. That's true if you're on TikTok or Twitter or Facebook. It doesn't matter. The things that are going to get people emotionally riled up are the things that get the most interaction. And so media kind of pushes us further and further into those things, which is why I like people like Congressman Jackson, who can say, remember, guys, it's an act. We're all doing the act. We all know that we're doing the act. Because when you sit down with these people, think like your crazy aunt on Facebook that's just spouting the most ridiculous nonsense. But then when you sit down with her for Thanksgiving dinner, she's actually somewhat reasonable. You can actually have a conversation with her. At least that's my experience with my family. Everything they put on the internet is nuts. And then I sit down with them and they're like, actually, yeah, I see that you have a point. Like, it's the same thing with legislators. It's the same thing with everybody that's on the other side of every issue that is important to us. If you can get face-to-face interaction, turns out we're all human.
Yeah.
And there's a human side to us.
Thank you for that, Jeff. I like that.
Yeah.
Sending this to my family.
Yeah. Am I going to have to remove that this week?
No.
I'll remove what I said.
It's okay. You can actually keep that. That's funny. Leave him.
Yeah, I remember there was a quote with like one of the former presidents. I know he's unpopular, but I think it might have been Reagan or whatever. But like it was like him and like the Speaker of the House would just constantly like butt heads and everything. And like, the quote was like, from 8 to 5, they are like the worst bitter enemies ever. And then like after 5 p.m. till 8 a.m., they're like best friends. And they like go out to dinner.
It must be a strange existence being a politician.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is part of what I can't get. Like some of the media persona is like also kind of, I have a hard time getting behind.
It never, like, has it always been like that?
It's really hard.
Because I think this media has become very disingenuous. I go to bars and I talk about politics, religion, and politics and religion. This is what I do. This is why I love this. I love doing it. Sorry.
I think it's always been this way. I think it's always been this way.
It used to be honest. People used to trust in the media, give them the truth. Well, and then now we don't even know what to believe.
I think it's because of the YouTubes, the TikToks, the Instagram. Like, if we're going to go like an anthology of why we have this, it's likely because of the short form medias that we've now like garnered. I'm no anthropologist.
When you've got like 3 minutes in a video to like put your position forward.
Yeah. Also, like, there's a lot of complicated issues that I don't think you could boil down to in just 3 minutes.
No, you really can't. Yeah.
You know?
This is why my friend Jeff Goddard's TikTok is so refreshing, because it's a calm and measured discussion of actual things.
Wait, Jeff, do you have Instagram? Because I don't have TikTok, but I religiously watch Eels on Instagram.
I do have Instagram. I use it. You know what? So I've been in South Africa for well over a month now, I guess. I've posted exactly one picture, and it's of me sitting on a bench petting a cat.
Respectable.
I'm not really an Instagram guy. I'm sorry. Like, I've licked an elephant. I've, you know, like, seen a giraffe. I've done all of these things. And I'm like, well, here's a cat. And that's what you guys are getting.
Sorry.
Can Instagram's not the place to follow me. Sorry.
Can we go back? Did you say you licked an elephant?
I definitely heard licked also. And I wanted to return to that also, too. Said also twice.
Okay, so there's a bit of a story here. When I was a child, I was licked by a giraffe and I swore vengeance. But the giraffe that's in our backyard here will not hold still.
Our resident giraffe.
To stay still long enough. So the elephant, I could get to. So I licked the elephant and I called it good.
What did it taste like?
It was very dusty. It was covered with dirt, obviously, because that's how they cool off.
Elephants. Are you immune
sweat.
To a lot
that's
of things now?
About elephants. Well, they don't
sweat. Somehow with context, I'm even more confused.
Yeah, that's fair.
An elephant's not a giraffe.
That's fair. I've learned so much about you that you had a vengeance.
I respect,
from
though.
This giraffe
I respect
licking
it.
You. This is hilarious.
Me. Okay, so I once in a pet store got peed upon by a cockatoo.
Peed upon? Upon? It's like, well, British right now. We
yes,
got peed
I got
upon.
Peed upon by a cockatoo or something. Some
wait,
big
birds
some,
pee? I thought they peed and pooped simultaneously.
I don't know. This bird released
my one car windshield. Yeah.
This bird released a stream. Of
nitrogen containing
urine.
Substance.
Well, back then I didn't know that. I don't know the answer to your question. This was a long time ago, but in my memory, a stream about the width of a pencil came out of this bird and landed on my leg, which by Jeff's logic means that I
should shit on a cockatoo.
Also should pee on a cockatoo.
But I'm going to pee on a different animal.
Pick your animal. What is our least favorite animal?
What you can get to,
a
I guess.
Snake.
Whatever yes. in your backyard.
I do have two cats. Sorry, cats.
No, we like cats. They don't deserve that. They would probably hate you forever.
That's all I got.
Think, I feel like if any animal's going to hold a grudge, it's a cat.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
My cat shit on the floor last night. So
a rabbit?
I heard rabbits can like be petty.
I love that.
Okay, all right, wait. There's only one person in that room that's old enough to remember when a president of the United States was attacked by a rabbit. Dave, do you know what president that was?
I don't know this story. I'm going to guess that it was...
Oh, boy.
I'm going to guess that it was Jimmy Carter.
Dead on.
Oh, so it couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Oh, I think I remember seeing like that documentary on it.
Why was he
like, what was it, Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Wait, yeah, the best documentary, like totally factual, hilarious. Everyone should watch it.
It didn't like Jimmy Carter like throw a hand grenade at that rabbit.
No. Jimmy Carter was in Monty Python.
No, that's a joke because that was such
I'm
a
not
long time
dead
ago.
Yet.
Jeff, why did he get attacked by a rabbit?
I don't know the story. I wasn't alive yet, but I do know that there are images of him trying to swim away from this rabbit, and it is chasing him
that is,
through the water.
Okay,
so
something to do this evening while I'm lying on the couch scrolling. I'm gonna look up this video.
Just
scrolling.
A little American history for the kids.
Amazing, amazing.
It could also be Bugs Bunny, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like that could be out of a Looney Tunes skit.
It does seem like a Looney Tunes episode. That'd be so funny if Jeff was just messing with us all and it was just a Looney Tunes episode.
I vote that Dave ends this episode by saying, like, that's all, folks. Except, no.
Well, I should end the show. Happy, Riley, Faith, Jeff, thanks for hanging out with me today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
What kind of doddering old fool would I be if I didn't thank you, Short Coats, for making this part of your week? If you're new and you like what you heard today, follow the show. If you're new here, not like new in general, if you're new here and you like what you heard today, follow the show wherever fine podcasts are available, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. Today's show is produced by Dave Etler. The show is made possible by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine student government and ongoing support from the Writing and Humanities program. Our music is by Dr. Vox and Catmosphere. I'm Dave Etler saying, don't let the bastards get you down. Talk to you in 1 week.
And that's all, folks.
That's all, folks. Listen cool. on a card.
Yeah, you didn't do it.
Hopefully, we'll keep that clip in.
Hi, Shortcoats. Look, life in medical education. Life in America, life in the world is often difficult, and I often wish I could help. All I have is this podcast, but in my wildest dreams, you have the support you need to lead a life of your choosing. You deserve to be happy, healthy, and successful in whatever ways you define those words. So if you need support because you've experienced racism, discrimination, harassment, mental health crises, I want you to be able to get the help that you need. And so I'm going to put some links in the show notes to some resources that you can use. But the bottom line is that, for what it's worth, I see you. I know you're out there. I wish I could do more. Maybe I can, in ways that I don't understand yet or know about. But I see you, and I'm glad you're here, and other people are too. The Short Code Podcast is a proud member of the MedEd Media Network. Inspiration, information, and guidance on your journey to medical school and beyond at mededmedia.com.